I want to tell you guys a little story today. Years ago, my grandmother was dying in the hospital, and I was discerning the priesthood at that time. And it was a profound time in my life, you know, one of not really knowing what my next step was going to be. But I was really in serious discernment at that time. And we went to New Jersey, where my grandmother and my grandfather lived. And so we were in the hospital. My whole family was there. My mom has three sisters, and they were kind of trying to figure everything out, you know, for their mom who was dying. And so they often were with her in the hospital room each night. But they got really tired, as you would, with trying to figure out what the next step should be. And so one night, my cousin Andrew and I stayed with my grandmother. And it was kind of a unique experience. I'll really never forget it. He sat on one side, I sat on the other side, and we were both discerning the priesthood. So most of our conversation that day was about that. And although my grandmother wasn't really conscious, I'd like to think that it was a wonderful thing to hear two of her grandsons talk about maybe being priests someday. I think already she was probably getting more insight to what the next phase of life was like than we had at that moment. And we prayed some litanies together. We prayed the rosary back and forth. But we were really up the whole night with my grandmother in prayer and conversation largely. And eventually, the next morning came, and my grandmother was still hanging on, right? And she did so for about another week. But many of us, my sister, me, many of my cousins, I had to go back to come back to Portland and start working again. And so then my friend Drew, he asked me if I wanted to climb Mount Hood. For those of you that know me knows that that's what I used to do before. I worked at the MAC and I was a climbing instructor and guide and did all that stuff beforehand. So I like stuff like that. So it's not out of character for somebody to ask that to me. So I really didn't want to go. A, I wasn't in shape. B, I know how hard it is. And I wasn't in like shape either mentally or emotionally for it. But as we know well as Catholics, I think one of the most beautiful part of our faith is we understand what redemptive suffering is. We understand that we can offer aspects of our own suffering for somebody else's suffering, especially to relieve that suffering. And that's a profound part of our faith that not a lot of other non-Catholic Christians understand completely. So in the end, I decided to go because I didn't want to go. I was like, that's the decision that I needed to realize is I didn't want to go. And that's what made me say yes to it, because I knew it would be a suffering. I knew it would be a difficulty. And for anybody who's ever done this before, you start at like Timberline parking lot in the middle of the night, usually not having gotten much sleep at all. So we start, I don't know, somewhere, probably like 1 a.m. or something like that, somewhere in the middle of the night. And we're going. And from the first step, I got exactly what I prayed for. I felt absolutely terrible. Step after step, I was just like, this is as awful as I thought it would be. And they groom the whole Palmer Glacier for skiing, for those who like to ski. So that part's not so bad. You're kind of walking up it, but it's long. It's pretty long slog. But we get up to the top of that, and I was so unbelievably done physically and emotionally that I said to my friend Drew and our other friend we were climbing with, I said, I can't go any further. I have to turn around. And they're like, are you sure? You know, you seem fine. I was like, no, I'm sure. I'm just finished. I said, but you guys keep going. You know, if you're fine, keep going. I know the way down. I'll be fine. So I go all the way down. And of course, you're always conscious of time on the mountain. You're like constantly looking at your watch. So I take note of the time and I start my way down. And then I crawl into the back of the car, crawl into the back seat and kind of fall asleep for a little while. And then my flip phone rings. It's long enough ago that still had the old flip phone. And it was my dad. And my dad said, you know, Pete, you know, Granny died. And I was like, okay. And of course, we were expecting that, so it wasn't a big surprise. And I sort of dozed off again. But, you know, I'm thinking about it a lot. And when I finally wake up again, I'm sort of absorbing what my dad had told me. And I finally realized that, you know, of course, with the 3-hour time difference from where I was in Portland to where my grandmother was in New Jersey, that my grandmother died at the moment that I said, I can't go any further, and I turned around. I say that to impress on all of us how close the Lord is to each of you individually. In that moment, he peels back the veil and he allows you to see the way that he's operating in your life. Kind of like, I am here. I am here. I understand. Because sometimes it feels like he's not there and he doesn't understand. But that's more our own struggle. It's not the Lord's struggle. He is there. He does understand. And then wouldn't you know, of course, the two grandchildren that were discerning the priesthood, that it was that very year that I entered the seminary to be formed for the Archdiocese of Portland, and my cousin entered the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal. Now, my cousin, he goes by a different name now. He goes by Brother Rufino Joseph, and he's been with the Friars ever since I entered formation for the Archdiocese. And he's been in Honduras for the last 8 years serving the poor in an orphanage. Now, I got word about 2 months ago that he has now been appointed the vocations director for the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal. And my mom and my aunt were like, I can't believe this. And I was like, the two cousins, Peter and Andrew, you're both the vocations director. They just thought that was the craziest thing in the world. But I think the two people who thought it was the least crazy were me and my cousin. We're like, somehow, some way, that actually makes complete sense. But I'll give you an insight to how difficult it is. Yes, there is a ton of work to do out there in the vineyard. But yeah, the amount of people that are coming to talk to me about becoming priests is not a multitude. We are blessed. Archbishop Sample will tell you. We have a lot of vocations in some proportion, right? We were doing pretty well in a certain regard. But we could be doing a whole lot better. But I'm going to give you guys a unique insight to what it's like for me. So first, this is not necessarily first, but part of one of the things you have is you have a psychological evaluation that's about 20-ish pages long. Then you have an application that's 33 pages long. Then you have to write an autobiography broken up into different sections. And then there is an essay, what does the priesthood mean to me? And another essay, why do I think God is calling me to the priesthood? There are four references, and there are transcripts from high school all the way on to any higher education that you have. I never in a million years thought I would have to read as much as I have to read now as the vocations director. I'm going to paint a picture of you, a picture for you of what this looks like from time to time. Okay? Man gets in touch with the vocations office, and he wants to discern the priesthood. Yes, okay, there we go, we got one. Very exciting, initially. Comes in to speak to me, dressed horribly, you know, like just, you know, looks kind of like a wreck. And we're like, okay, well, we could work with that, I think, you know. And then you start to review some more of the information. One of the last questions on the application, is there anything that you have done that could scandalize the church in the future? I've learned now after 4 years, I actually go to that question first before I read the rest of the application. It takes a while to learn these things. And you're like, okay, well, there was one particular instance of indecent exposure, public nudity. You're like, okay, I guess it could be worse. Let's see what the context is for this situation, right? Then you go in there, you're like, okay, well, doesn't really get along with mom and dad. Was well off, came from good parents and stuff, but they don't get along so much. And they don't particularly agree with him being in the vocations office right now. You're like, oh man, there's going to be a whole lot to this whole entire situation. You're like, you look, oh, prior military service. You're like, well, that's good. Maybe he's actually got some discipline in his life. So you're kind of trying to put all the pieces together. It's really tough. The profile that I just gave you is St. Francis of Assisi. There still has to be room in our church when we have come from really crazy places personally, familially, in our own faith and spiritual life, there has got to be room for saints like St. John Vianney, St. Francis of Assisi, St. Joseph of Cupertino. We really have to look beyond the exterior and see if somebody's really capable of the job. But that happens over time, just like it happens over time for each one of us out here. Now, I mean, I never in a million years, nor did my cousin ever expect to be the vocations director of our respective dioceses and religious orders. But the Lord can do a lot with us. He really can change our life. One of the things that he reminds us of mostly is that you have to know where you're going. That's one of the lasting impressions that he leaves in today's gospel. He said, yes, you will be in a position, sometimes a position of power, to have some aspect of power, maybe in the ministry, maybe in the local church, maybe in the universal church. Who knows what that is? He goes, but I don't care about your power, because guess what? You have no power. It's like, I'm the one who has the power. That's what Jesus says to us, right? He's like, the power part doesn't really matter. What matters is that your names are written in the book of heaven. What matters is that you know where you're going. And really, I would add, and you know how to lead people there. That's the most important part of the puzzle. Some of you guys have heard me say this before, but it's kind of become like a little bit of my thing in a way. I sometimes call it what's next theology. Many young people in this parish, so you could use this at some point. But in this particular example, we're going to talk about a high school senior. Works really well for example's sake. So I have my nephew, in fact, my nephew Dean. He was just here with my sister and my youngest nephew. And we talk about things like that. He's about to go to college. So I would say, Dean, what's next? He's like, well, Uncle Pete, I'm going to go to Tarleton State University in Texas. So that's what's next for him. And I'm like, fantastic. And then I say, what's next? And he's like, oh, come on. Sometimes he'll call me Father, Uncle Pete, Father Pete, Uncle Father Pete. I get like lots of names there. But he says, well, you know, I'm going to study psychology, you know, because I think I want to be a psychologist and then I want to move on and do a doctorate and everything. I was like, okay, fantastic. I was like, you should do that for the church, by the way, because we need psychological evaluations for people becoming seminarians. So that's what I'm encouraging to. I was like, you'll have a job the rest of your life. Trust me. So then next step, what's next? I don't know, Uncle Peter. I guess I kind of want to meet somebody, you know, fall in love. Okay, what's next? You see where this is going. The endurance is all on your side of the table. You have to have it. You have to keep going. So what's next? Oh, well, I don't know. Hopefully we get married, have children. Okay, what's next? You keep asking them that question, and it's going to take a while. But then eventually, they're going to get to a spot, at least in this hypothetical example, where they're going to be more close to the age of my grandmother when she was dying. And you're going to get to that point. You're like, okay, what's next? And they're going to be like, Father, I don't know. I mean, I'm old. I don't really know what's next. Then you have to ask them the all-important question one more time. What's next? But you don't have to leave them hanging, though. You could actually give them the answer in this case. The answer is to be with Jesus Christ in heaven. That is the destination. That is the goal. How many people do we know, whether in our own family or somebody we work with or somebody out in the world, that does not know that? And what are you by definition? Again, when I was climbing Mount Hood that day, we had a destination. The destination was the summit of Mount Hood. If you don't know your destination, what are you by definition? You are lost. There are so many people that are lost. So it takes a while sometimes to come around and get back on track, but you can get back on track. St. Francis could get back on track. I can get back on track. Father Tim could get back on track. Any one of us can do that. The church has outlined exactly the way to do that. And it's not that complicated. When I was discerning at that time and usually going to the cathedral, The thing that got me back on track is what everybody's Catholic grandmother would have told them. And I wanted it to be so much more fancy and complicated than that. I started going to Mass. I started going to daily Mass. I started going to frequent confession. And I started to pray the rosary. And that was the thing that worked. I was like, man, I really wanted to be fancier and more romantic than that. It doesn't need to be. You just have to follow the basics. We need to know where we're headed. If you know where you're headed, then you know where your family should be headed. If you know where you're headed, then you know where your spouse should be headed, and vice versa. We have to lead people to the destination. That's the reason that Jesus is important, because he's eternal. That's where we want to reside for eternity. That's our mission, folks. At the end of every single Mass, it's a mission. That's where the word Mass, Misa, comes from. And remember, at the end, every single dismissal that we have in the church begins with this one word. Go. Go in peace. Go in peace, glorifying the Lord by your life. Go and announce the gospel of the Lord. The very end of the Mass is the beginning of the mission. And if you know the beginning and you know the end, then every single moment from this moment right here is oriented toward the right direction. It means every decision that we make from when we leave this church, and in fact, from when I'm done with this homily, should be oriented toward heaven. If it's not, something's got to change. Something has to be reoriented back on the path. Especially for those closest to you that you've earned a voice in their life, if you see them off the path, we need to say something. We need to help them get back on the path. Oh gosh, if we can do that, then our names are written in heaven. God bless you all today.